the world tomorrow. Ambassador College presents Garner Ted Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. This is Garner Ted Armstrong with the good news of the world tomorrow. Are moral standards any longer necessary in this modern world of ours? They don't seem to guide nations. They don't seem to control manipulations between government leaders. They don't seem to have any effect upon the war in Vietnam. They don't seem to govern the actions of your neighbors and possibly of your community leaders, and certainly probably not of yourself, for that matter. Everybody's talking about it. All the old standards are coming under challenge today. Everything is going to change, they say. And they're calling it new morality. When students are asked, what about cheating? I have a whole volume on cheating and its effect on students in colleges. They say, well, sure I'd cheat, doesn't everybody? The only problem is when you get caught. There's a new breed of youngsters on America's campuses today, and the same thing holds true in Britain and Australia and South Africa, around the world. And remember, these are leaders of tomorrow. Leaders of science, industry, of technology, art, literature, government, religion. The leaders of tomorrow's world that are supposed to extricate us from this fantastic, frightening age in which we live, studying busily such things as the humanities, all the psychologies, studying literature and art and music and science and various technical fields, mathematics and the abstracts of it. Future spacemen, astronauts, they claim. Technologists. Scientists, explorers, inventors, discoverers. Here they are, these youngsters on the colleges of today, and here's what they're saying and thinking. There's a new kind of a breed of fellow on the U.S. prep school campuses. He's called the Nego, N-E-G-O. Now, a Nego or a Nego, coming from negative, perhaps, is a young man who cannot find any basis for the standards of morality, faith in life, religion, ethics, judgments of what is right and what is wrong. Some of the examples of their thinking are these. An outstanding senior boy who was getting high marks at one of America's better-known colleges said, this is a world of madness. Absurd, stupid, nothing solid. There are no values to depend upon. Well, you know, when they look at the way people are living life, that's absolutely true. Who are you going to depend upon? Not your fellow students trying to look over your shoulder when you're getting good grades. Who are you going to depend upon? Your professor who says you shouldn't depend upon anybody? Who are you going to depend upon? Your family? When they may have been divorced and you're not quite sure who your father is? Who are you going to depend upon? Leaders in science, industry, government, economics? Well, people aren't quite sure just where to look and where there are any standards, anything solid. A 17-year-old with his tie askew said hesitatingly, I have no values because there is no basis for any values. And an athlete argued with a classmate, well, you say you've got something inside that tells you what's right and wrong. Boy, I wish I had whatever that thing is. You take one good look at the world and you'll see there's no interest in decency, only in power and in pushing the other guy around. This is not crackpot thinking. It's not isolated. It's becoming commonplace. It's a fair sample of the deep pessimism prevalent among boys at some of America's finest prep schools. At Exeter, one faculty member said, in 25 years of teaching, I have never seen boys more troubled. They see on all sides a sadistic indifference to human values, and it has shattered their idealism, whatever they might have had when they came to school. Fear of the future is widespread. Happiness is money, they insist, and anyone who says he isn't interested in money is a fool. Or they say, all I want is prestige and dough. Or they say, conformity is mandatory if you're to get ahead. This is what the leaders of tomorrow are saying as they go through their prep schools and colleges of today. Now, they're asking just what are the standards of today? And so some thinkers have put it in the terms new morality. In answer to a newspaper columnist, a college student wonders, are moral standards really necessary? He said, I'm taking a course from a professor who asks many disturbing questions. He tells us to forget our ethical and moral standards. But does he really mean that? How can I refute his statements? Sure he means it. Now, I'll tell you how you can refute his statements. In the first place, they're complete error, but that's not enough. You've got to prove they are error. So let's begin by just looking rationally and logically at the world around you. Now, I'm here to tell you there are some absolutes and there are some standards, and you can prove them. And there is a God. I don't mean an inner you, and I don't mean somebody within you or a better idea about humankind or something in plants or animals or blades of grass. I don't mean pantheism or some of the old ideas of God in our own image either. I don't mean better motivations or higher impulses in human nature. I mean an absolute God. You ought to prove that to yourself. You ought to write for these booklets, Does God Exist, and the Proof of the Bible. I'll come back to that a little later, but right now, why don't you just take a look at life the way people are living it, at cause and effect. Here are people living without any guides, living without any standards, living without any set of rules. Take a look at just one aspect of it. New and relaxed standards of sexual behavior among modern youth may yield beneficial results in the future, said a well-known Canadian columnist. Columnist, not communist. Noting increased premarital activity and experimentation, he said, I'm not appalled by this. I think youth is working out a new pattern of relations with the opposite sex to replace one now obsolete. Now, that's very interesting, but let's go back to the thing of cause and effect. Let's put it all together. Illegitimacy is skyrocketing today. Adoption agencies are horribly overcrowded, not enough homes to go around, so today even single girls are allowed to adopt a baby and are being paid for it, and some are literally doing it for the pay. Little children suffer misery, loneliness, frustrations, lasting stigmata. These are the curse of the free sex and so-called new morality of youthful parents of today. But that's just a part of it. Divorce mounts up and up. Your chances, if you get married before age 21, are quite poor of still being married a few years later. Shattered homes with all the other physiological, financial, spiritual, psychological entanglements with deep mental and moral roots being jerked up, yanked out, torn up, turned upside down. Little children torn between staying with mom and spending a weekend with dad. What are the fruits of it? What is the outcome of it? Do you want some of it? Is this what you look for in life? What is the effect? Got a letter from a student in the university who said he and his date had talked about this thing of free love. And so had other fellows and their dates. A real good roommate of his said he believed in this new morality. And so he practiced free love among other students on the university campus. But then he found his girlfriend was doing it with students of another nearby campus, and he became so absolutely enraged he broke off their relationships immediately. He was one of these hypocrites that had a double standard. He says, well, what's good for me is all right for me, but it's not good for you. Now, when he got right down to it, he didn't like it, he detested it, he hated. When it was a matter of satiating his own lusts and vanity, that was one thing, but somebody else, well, that was something else again. Sort of a paradox of human nature. Human nature isn't fair. Human nature is not rational. Human minds don't make sense. They have to go to a spiritually revealed guide. We have to go to a definite source of knowledge, of revealed truth, to tell us what is the way to peace and happiness and success and right marriages. So today, divorce skyrockets. What are the fruits? What is the effect of all of this experimentation, premarital love, all of the sex on campus? What's the outcome? Is it good? I mean, by anybody's standards, is it good? Venereal disease is reaching epidemic proportions among youths, causing horrible deformities in babies, missing limbs, blindness, deafness, even death at birth. And VD is spreading today rapidly among teenagers. It's epidemic in Washington, D.C. It's epidemic in some of our big cities. Thousands and thousands have it who don't know they've got it. And it's spreading among teenagers who are only too eager to believe all the garbage and the trash that is being fed them by many a licentious adult mind who only seeks some common belief to salve his own guilty conscience. You know, in the Bible, there's quite a condemnation against some educators. Now, if you're a teacher, a professor, a minister, a lawyer, a judge, I don't care who you are and in what walk of life, you better listen to this because it isn't from my ideas. I didn't write it. But it's an everlasting indictment and condemnation of those who seek to twist law and turn it upside down. And it gets right down to their own private secret little sins that they don't like to admit even to themselves. Back in the first chapter of the book of Romans, the Apostle Paul was inspired to write about those who like to reject the idea of God, who like to kick God out of their consciousness, who say, let's keep the subject of God out of our classrooms, let's keep prayers out of the school, let's get rid of any and all religion. Now, on the other hand, religion is not gotten rid of. I was just going through some textbooks again this morning because I'm researching some of the curricula for our grade and high schools that
I'm in charge of. And I was finding the usual proverbial holidays, and here was an old druidic custom that they had perpetuated. Here were all the symbols, and it was teaching the little kiddies in the sixth grade all about these druids and their bonfires and their weird notions of ghosts and goblins and demons and witches and devils and so on, and even encouraged them to do the same thing. Now, that is religion. That's a pagan religion, completely and purely pagan. It was saying so right in the sixth grade reading book. Came from the druids up in Ireland. And they were encouraging little sixth graders all across the United States and in Africa and England and every place else to do the same thing. Now, on the one hand, if you were to say, Our Father which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, maybe they'll take you all the way to the Supreme Court, and I don't know when you'll get out of jail. They may be piping sunshine to you the rest of your life. That may be one of the biggest infractions you could ever commit. I don't really know what are the consequences of a child trying to pray to his God in class. But apparently it is still legal to teach and to inject and to deliberately insert into the minds of little, well-intentioned, innocent children all of the rank pagan religions that are available. I mean from the ancient Druids, the ancient Huns, the Visigoths, Vandals, Ostrogoths, the Chinese, Japanese, the Indians, the Nepalese, the Tibetans, you name it, you've got it in your books. Now try to teach them about Christ and about God, well, that's taboo, that's prohibited. Is it good? Are the fruits of the new morality good? Here in the first chapter of the book of Romans, the Apostle Paul described those who, in verse 28, he said, did not like to retain God in their knowledge. So here are physics professors dealing with fantastic laws who deny God. Scientists dealing with fantastic laws who deny God. Especially professors in the humanities who deal with psychology, who deal with all of the various studies of sociological change, especially historians and people who deal with ancient literature and theologians and so on. Now, God says of them, even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them up to, or gave them over to, or as it has it in the original, permitted them to have a reprobate mind. Now, I don't know who you are, you know. I just don't. If you're a professor, you know your private life. I don't. Have you got a reprobate mind? It might make you mad for somebody to say that you have, but I mean in the secrecy of your own mind, is it reprobate? You know, you wouldn't want to come up to somebody and ask him on the street, are you an old reprobate? But it depends what your standards are. Now, God goes on to define, so we're not left in the dark, we can find out, what does he mean, reprobate mind? Does he mean judging by people's standards, or is there a definite set of laws which determine what is a reprobate mind? Well, he says, here's what they muse on and think on and talk about and do. Verse 29, being filled with all unrighteousness. Now, unrighteousness is not just a spiritual, biblical phraseology or definition by itself. It merely means that which is contrary to law. It means being against law. It means being evil as opposed to good. And there is a standard which sets down what is evil and what is good. Fornication, that's premarital love. That's the whole subject of the so-called new morality. Is this what even some of those who are the leaders to preach and teach to others are telling them? Wickedness, that still means what it says. It's still wicked, you know, to burn your father's car or to tear down the little house behind the house Halloween evening. It's still wicked. To build a pit in front of a blind man or to curse a deaf man while you smile at him. Those are statements in the Bible. It's still wicked to taunt and make fun of an older, bald-headed man. Sure it is. Wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy. Now, is there any of that? Higher education? Murder? Ever hear much of murder today? Debate? Is it wrong to debate? What is a debate? A debate doesn't seek to establish truth. A debate is trying to find how clever can you be to get the other fellow on the run and to knock down his arguments, and your mind is not open to find out what is the truth. Deceit? Any deceit on campus or around the world today? To be a good politician, what do you have to be? You have to be clever at infighting. Know what to lie about and what to avoid and what to deny. Now, I'm not just saying that because I believe that to be true. I'm just saying what my newspapers tell me. I look at a couple of politicians involved in a speech, and I don't find very much about weighing their words as to what is true and what isn't. I find whether the man is clever, and it describes whether or not he is able to put it in such a way as to get the other fellow on the run. and it evaluates his tactics. It's sort of like a war in which strategy and logistics play such an important part rather than what is the reason you're fighting. Amazing. Deceit, malignity, whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, despiteful, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, without understanding, covenant breakers. Break their word. Don't keep their word. Tell you that this kid writes in and he says our moral standards really necessary. Now my professor keeps telling us, forget our ethics and our moral standards. Isn't that telling a child, break your word? Don't be true to yourself or anybody else? Well then, is the first chapter of Romans at least an accurate prediction of the way the world would be today? Whether you think it's based upon law or not, is it an accurate description of life the way people are living it today? I should say it is. Without natural affection. Interesting. Especially when you read back in verse 26, God gave them up to vile affections, for even their women did change the natural use into that which is against nature, and likewise also the man, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lust one toward another. It describes some of the evil perversions of today and shows those who are the most active in trying to tell you there are no standards are doing so because they've decided in advance they want to kick God out of their own conscience because they want to be free to do what they want to do and not have anything, not even the nagging worry of their own conscience to tell them it's wrong. Now, if you college students are going to listen to that kind of thing without looking into it and let other people do your thinking for you, then you're headed down the same trail of a lot of your peers and your elders. They say, save us from this world which we've created. They admit the world is pretty torn up. They admit the world is a competitive system. They admit the world is torn with strife and racial bigotry and bias, fraught with wars, filled with tensions, trembling on the brink of nuclear suicide. They admit the world is a time of insoluble problems, of growing disparity between the have and the have-not nations, of a fantastic population explosion, of drought and famine and threatening starvation in India. We admit the world is filled with such headaches, it's almost incomprehensible to even describe it all. So they say, rescue us, and in the meantime, they strip away from you all the tools you could use to make sense to anybody. They say, go out and build without tools, without right angles, without a sense of responsibility, without any understanding of any laws. What are the fruits of the so-called new morality? Are they good? No, they're not good. They're horribly evil. And as usual, the innocent have to suffer. Millions of unborn children. Kind of pitiful, isn't it? What do you want out of life? Do you want healthy grandchildren, or you want some that are blind and maimed and missing a limb? Do you want to have the time of your life trying to keep track of just who is your son-in-law? Or do you want a family bound together based upon some laws and some ethics? No, nothing seems very tangible, and as a result, people today, as never before, are frustrated, they're disillusioned, they're left without a sense of direction, they know nothing but fear, questions, problems, torment, no clear-cut answers, not knowing the future, not understanding the final outcome of world events. So it's time you got back to the basic framework. There are laws. There are absolutes. There is authority. There is a moral code. There is a system of living laws, and they are alive. They act. They live. They're going to wallop you 100 ways from one if you disobey them, and they are going to bless you in spite of what your neighbors do if you do obey them. And nobody can take away your reward because these laws are spiritual. You can't escape their penalty, and neither can anybody take away from you the blessings if you obey them. Those laws were revealed to man. They're not something we've devised. Sure, man's laws change, and human beings change in the way they act in the face of God's laws, but that doesn't change God's laws. They're practical. They live. All you need to do is discover what are they. The first thing you've got to discover, and it'll solve all your other problems, believe it or not, is there a great, all-wise, all-knowing creator being who put man on this earth, and can you prove it to yourself? Once you get that settled, if you really come to know and come to believe, and you can say like Job did, I know my Redeemer liveth, by the time you're able to say that, then your problems about what are the laws and should you obey them are already over. No problem. God is the lawgiver, and you obey him or else. I've been to discussing how active and how up-to-the-minute these principles and laws are, and in trying to refute this idea so many people have today, that the Bible is not a book of ethics. The Bible is not for us today. The Bible is not up-to-date. That's weird. It's ridiculous. What do you mean it's not up-to-date? Happiness is out of date, is it? Good physical health is now out of date. Mental stability, free from worry, free from torment and fear, this is out of date. You can't buy the things you really want out of life. You just can't do it. And you can't get them by sitting around and thinking positive thoughts, either. You can't get them with good thoughts for the day. You can't get them by listening to the heartbroken appeal of all kinds of oddball theological ideas and arguments that are sort of going to be a blessing to your little old bitty heart, but which aren't going to put any money in your bank account, which are not going to solve your sicknesses and diseases, which aren't going to straighten out your marriage and make your children happier and more obedient, which aren't going to give you any definite day-by-day guide for life. Here in the book of Proverbs, in verse 20, wisdom cries without. She utters her voice in the streets. She cries in the chief place of concourse, in the openings of the gates. In the city she utters her word, saying, how long, you simple ones, will you love simplicity? And the scorners delight in their scorning, and fools hate knowledge. Now God says in the book of Romans there are a lot of educated fools today who are ever learning and never able to come to the knowledge of the truth. He says of the writing of books there is no end. But he says men search and they strive and they argue and they bicker and they nag and they worry, but they never get back to the basics and they never come to the knowledge of the truth. Why? Because he said in the verse 7, the first chapter of Proverbs, the fear of the eternal is the beginning of knowledge. That's where to start. Does God exist? What's your answer? All right, you probably thought up an answer, but what do you base it on? Knowledge or somebody else's opinion? And is God, if he does exist, going to step out of the way if you think he doesn't? No, you can't depend on that happening either. So it's time you quit letting other people do your thinking for you. Don't follow vague notions. Get the truth. Write for these booklets, Does God Exist, and the proof of the Bible. Now, God goes on to say, and here's the whole upshot of this new morality thing. He said, here is wisdom, here are absolutes, here are laws available, if you'll just look, if you'll try to prove it, if you'll at least give it the time of day. But now he goes on to say in verse 24, because I have called, again, this is personifying the knowledge, the wisdom, the guidelines for life that are available, because I have called and you refused, I have stretched out my hand and no man regards, but you set at naught all my counsel. Now take a psychology class. Let's just illustrate the point. Do you think you could get anywhere by carrying a Bible into a psychology class? Have people set at naught this book? I don't care who you think's talking at this moment. That's an aside right now. Here's somebody saying this book, the book of the Bible, all the books of the Bible, have been set aside. Have they? Sure they have. They've been legislated out of the way in some cases. Absolutely ruled out of the schoolroom by a court decision. All right, now we'll see what's going to happen. God says, because you've done this, because you would have none of my reproof, I will also laugh at your calamity. I will mock when your fear comes. When your fear comes as desolation and your destruction comes as a whirlwind, when distress and anguish come upon you, then shall they call upon me, but I will not answer. They shall seek me early, but they won't find me. For that they hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the eternal, they would none of my counsel. They despised all of my reproof. Therefore shall they eat of the fruit of their own way. People ask, well, why would God want to punish us? He's not punishing you. You don't feel God whipping you any. He doesn't walk up and smack you between the eyes or bust you a good one over the shins. You get into your own problems. You're your problem. I'm my problem. I'm not your problem. You're not my problem. You are your own problem. You eat the fruit of your own way, don't you? It says, be filled with our own devices. That's all. God just says, no, if you don't want me, I'll just turn around, turn my back to you, and walk all through the universe and leave you all by yourself. And then you try to figure it. You try to politic your way through life. See where it gets you. So where has the new morality led us? Let me go back to the words of this youngster again. He pretty well puts it in simple terms. This, he said, is a world of madness. He's talking about the new morality, a senior boy, good grades, one of America's outstanding students in an outstanding university, one of the outstanding prospects for leadership tomorrow. This
is a world of madness. It's absurd. It's stupid. Nothing's solid. There are no values to depend upon. Listen. Americans, Britons, and Australians, to the voice of an educated youngster. Listen to what this fellow learned in college. Listen to his values. You want to vote for him? You want him to become the captain of industry? You want him to become the next astronaut? You want him to be the first man on the moon? This is stupid. It's absurd. Nothing's solid. It's a world of madness. There are no values to depend upon. You want him to become your preacher, your lawyer, your judge? Do you want him to become the husband of your daughter? Is this what we're after? It's what we're getting. That's the product. You happy with it? I'm not. I'm a little sick to my stomach over a great deal of it. And it's about time you ask yourself whether you believe all that kind of thing or whether or not you can prove otherwise. Write for these booklets I've announced. Does God exist? And the proof of the Bible. And then write for the booklets that get right down into the detail of these living laws, the one on the Ten Commandments. And write for the booklet on the key to success. The seven laws to success. What it is, how to achieve it. The things in life that money cannot buy. And you'll also want to write for this booklet on the wonderful world tomorrow, what it will be like. Here are the two widely divergent views of politicians and government leaders and then scientists of what they secretly feel the world tomorrow is going to be like. Many of them feel it won't even be here. And then scientists talk about a wonderful, glittering, sort of a gigantic Disneyland of leisure, of more pleasure and ease and luxury for the few, but more starvation, more riots, more wars, more upsets. For the many. But all the way through this booklet, you will see solutions. You will see the predictions about the outcome. You will see present-day trends and conditions in the big countries around this world analyzed and solved. You will see tomorrow's headlines today. You'll see the really big news that is not being reported anywhere else about the way this world is going to be. And included, one of the most fantastic newspapers you've ever read. Sort of a could-be newspaper, the way the world news could be today, and believe it or not, the way it will be in not very many more years. The best news you could read, an article about total disarmament. Articles about the solution to the big problems that everyone worries about today. Solving our economic problems, bringing people out of poverty, solving the racial hatreds and strife of people. Making wasteland productive. Solutions to the problems of weather, solving the problems of divorce, solving the problems of education and school dropouts, what have you. It's all here in this newspaper that is contained inside the booklet. Now, you don't have to ask for it separately. The booklet is entitled, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like. It compares today's world with tomorrow's and shows you why it needs these solutions and exactly what they are. And there's a complete picture of it given. The exact conditions that will become extant. How we'll finally be totally delivered from the many problems that constantly confront us today. This booklet, as no other does, shows you exactly the meaning and the purpose of this broadcast, The World Tomorrow. That's why it's by the same title. The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like. It's free of charge, no price, no one's going to call on you. We don't give your name to someone else. We protect it and safeguard it in our own IBM files. And we'll send it to you immediately upon receiving your request if you'll write to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California. That's Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. Be sure to tell us the call letters of your station and write for the booklet immediately. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow. Send your letters to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California.